I'm so happy you're here. Thanks for being with us today. I'm your host, Devin Kuntzman. I'm a toddler parenting coach, life design coach, and founder of Transforming Toddlerhood. This conference is on a mission to dispel the myth that toddlerhood is terrible by supporting parents and caregivers in discovering it's possible to nurture this sensitive developmental period while overcoming everyday challenges with more confidence and ease. I am so excited to be here with all of you and with our very special guest, Lauren Tam, Language of Listening Master Coach. Welcome, Lauren.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so happy you're here and to have you back on the conference. It's just such an honor to be able to chat with you today. So before we get started, I would love for you to introduce yourself and just tell the audience a little bit about who you are and what you do, especially for those people in the audience who may not know you.
There's so much. We gotta like pack it all in. I was an ICU nurse for 8 years, and I worked with the sickest patients of the sickest patients. And I got married, I was pregnant with my son, and I thought, you know, I'm going to get this parenting thing down. If I can handle life in an ICU, surely I could parent with ease. And then I became a mother, and I found out that I was completely wrong. And it was much more challenging and discouraging, defeating at times. And you have all these external things kind of coming at you from culture, friends, and family. And you can just think, gosh, you know, where am I going wrong? This isn't easy like it's supposed to be. Or I read 10 different books, but I, you know, I'm in the heat of the moment with my toddler right now, and I cannot remember what was on page 302. And what I'm supposed to do? What are the 10 steps? So that's when I eventually met Sandy Blacker, the founder of Language of Listening, and just fell in love with this simple three-part approach to parenting, and been training with her ever since. And I am now a Language of Listening Master Parent Coach. I have worked with hundreds of families directly, and millions of people in the past year alone have read my parenting work on the military wife and mom. And I say that because I want parents to know that there are parents out there who are hungry for change. They are looking for change. They want answers. And the 10 different books that they've read, maybe they still feel lost and they're looking for something that's simple. And that's where I've fell in love with Language of Listening. And that is what I continue to teach and work with parents now today.
Yes, that's so beautiful. I love your story and your commitment just to service and supporting parents. And I love Sandy. And that's actually, you know, how we met each other is through Sandy. And she's just such a gem. So yeah, thank you for all that you do and bring out there in the parenting world through your blog. I love it. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, it's been a privilege that parents, you know, want to work with me and let me into their lives. They share their most vulnerable parenting stories. And I think nothing is more courageous than being a parent and saying, I'm struggling and I want to find a better way. That's nothing short of heroic in showing up that way for our kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think courage is it's the name of the game. Like courage, it takes so much courage every day to wake up and parent, especially in the toddler years, because the toddler years can be grueling because it's all the caregiving from the infant years, along with all of the active parenting that comes along with like an older child. So it's like really like one foot on each side of this like canyon, and it can be downright grueling. And I find that, you know, when parents come to me in my practice, like there's just so much frustration, fear, and self-doubt. And the word courage just really resonates with me. And actually, before my business was called Transforming Toddlerhood, it was called Courageous Parents Collective. So courage has always been like a big part of the equation for me. So I love that you bring that in.
Yeah. And I would also use the word grueling too, to describe the toddler years. I very much did feel that way.
Yes, exactly. I think it's a good, like it's a really vibrant adjective to describe how it feels sometimes to be a parent and caregiver during these years.
Yeah.
So today we're going to be talking about crying and, you know, the toddler years, they're full of tears, not only with the children, with our toddlers, but also us adults. There can be lots of tears on our side too. So mainly we're talking about children's toddler tears today, but I would love for you to start with what you think are some of the common myths about crying, anger, and sadness in the toddler years, and why parents and caregivers have such a strong reaction to this.
Yeah. Well, we all have a story from our own childhood about crying. And I think it's very important to dig into that, perhaps go into some self-reflection about experiences that you had surrounding crying as a child, because many of our beliefs about crying start then. So I don't know what for those of you who are listening, what your experience is, but I can tell you my own experience where I started getting beliefs about crying. And my mother remarried. My stepfather was very explosive. And so loud noises, I started to kind of associate with, like, I need to go inward and, like, I shut down when I hear really loud noises. And I just have this strong reaction, like I have to get away from it or escape. Anything like yelling, crying, screaming, that kind of stuff started to solidify for me. So when I had a child, my son was a toddler and he's having a tantrum, and everything in my body is telling me to run away from this child, get away or stop the crying in some way. And for many of the parents that I've worked with, their belief about crying usually sometimes circles around this idea that they have to stop the crying, like just get it to stop. And conventional parenting advice too also talks about, well, how are you going to get your toddler to stop crying? How do you stop temper tantrums? And that can be a heavy burden to walk around feeling like you have to constantly fix whatever's going on with your child's emotions, right? And so can you repeat the first part of your question? Because I don't think I've answered that, but I just did talk about the belief why we have such a strong reaction to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I definitely hear the strong reaction part is like, because we have our own beliefs inside of us. And I hear the first part of the question was, what are some of the common myths? And I think you started to touch on that with, like, some of the myths are like, hey, like, we have to make our children stop crying. That is something we have to fix their emotions. Yeah. So that's what I heard as, like, one of the myths. And I'm not sure, maybe you see some other ones as well.
Yeah, it's just this idea that we are responsible for the emotions of others, and that somehow it's a direct reflection on us as a parent. If I'm at the grocery store and my child's having a meltdown, that can feel like, hey, well, then clearly I'm a bad mother because I can't control my child's emotions. I can't. And then I need to go into fixing mode and do something about this. And that's a big myth, that one, we have to fix it for the child. Two, that the child's not capable of building these skills on their own over time with our support and guidance. And three, it's just like this idea that it equates to good or bad parenting, whether or not your child's in tears or not, when actually they're two totally separate things.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's easy to collapse that. I mean, so my background for many years is that I worked with parents and toddlers directly through nannying for many, many years. And even myself as a caregiver, there are times like where I was like, yeah, I'm doing a great job because the kids are happy.
Yeah.
I am doing such a bad job. And it doesn't matter, caregiver, parent, grandparent, teacher, like, that's a lot of times how we equate, you know, our personal, like, success or failure inside of it. And so, like, making ourselves responsible for other people's feelings and emotions is, like, the biggest burden. And it's so interesting because that, like, good and bad judgment comes up. not only on ourselves, but also for our little ones. That's like, oh, they're crying, so that's bad, or they're right. bad, you know? So the judgment goes just everywhere. On accident, yeah. you don't mean to, but it happens.
Totally. And it's just this downward spiral, right? Like, ah, you know, the kid's bad for crying. I'm bad because I can't stop it, you know, and it carries this really big heaviness on it. And when we dig into the reality of what's really going on, as we will in for the rest of this talk, I hope that it will give parents some encouragement to realize that, hey, the only person who gets to decide whether you're a good parent or a parent who's doing things that they're just not okay with is you. You get to set that barometer for yourself. And that's an empowering place to be.
Yeah, it is. It is the most empowering place we can be when working with small children. So yeah, like speaking of empowerment and like looking at, okay, so what is like what are the facts around crying? We know that crying can be a positive experience for a toddler. And, you know, it's a way for children to meet their needs. Can you tell us more about that? From your point of view?
Yeah, so all kids have three basic needs. Power, which is I need to control something. You see this all the time with kids. They want to either control the way that they're playing, control decisions that they're making, try to control others, try to control themselves. The second need is connection. It's I care about connecting with you as a human. I want to be with you. I want to have a loving experience with you. I want to feel heard and understood by you. I want to feel seen by you. That is the second need that we all have. And the great thing about these needs is they are across all the ages. They don't change, right? And the final need,
adults too.
Yeah. The final need is experience. It's this, I have this body and what can I do with it? Or I want to experience something. Like for a child, it might be jumping or, you know, shouting loud just for the heck of it because it's fun. They haven't experienced that in life yet. So those are the three basic needs. And when we start to look at crying, we can use those needs as a way to understand why in the world our child would be crying or throwing a tantrum. And if we can start to make sense of that, it can help us start to problem solve with how to best help our child in these situations. I love to use in a crying example, a bedtime example, where my daughter repeatedly would come out of bed at bedtime and we would try to figure out like all these different ways that we could approach this to get her to stay in her room. And she would come down and we'd go through all the things we did, you know, success training where we would, you know, tell her to stay in her room and we go back and we come check on her. And then she would still keep coming out after working on it for a long time. And then we're like, okay, we got to lay the hammer down and get control of this kid. They don't run this house. We do. And so then we started getting more angry and we're like, maybe if we show more force, then she'll do it. And actually, it was crazy because we were like, my gosh, we are trying all the things, even things that we didn't want to do initially, that may be more conventional parenting because, you know, we're all human as parents and we just want to try and figure things out, still coming out. And then the light bulb went on for me was that her underlying need this whole time was connection. And so we started saying, come here, I'll give you a hug and, you know, I love you so much and let me just walk you back up to bed. And it was like, my gosh, just letting her have that moment of reconnecting. And she wants to like check in and know that everything between us is still okay after 30 minutes and have this hug and this connection. It was like, wow, now that I figured out her underlying need is connection. And that's a whole reason she's been coming downstairs and crying. And we just addressed that. And everything changed. So I say that example just to iterate, like once you understand your child's underlying need with the crying, it can really start to change everything. And maybe you were going to start leading into some of the emotions that we can look for with the different needs You want me to go into that?
So sure. Yeah, I'd love to hear about that. And also maybe an example of like what it looks like when a child's crying to meet their need for power as well.
Yeah, so power, more often you might see angry crying, right? A classic example might be, you know, the blue cup versus the red cup. And you gave the blue cup, they wanted the red cup. Now they're just completely angry and furious with you, and they're kicking and screaming in that kind of way. You know, that can be, you know, many times crying is both, it can be both connection and power. Sad crying is usually the underlying need is connection. And angry crying can definitely be meeting the need for power. Loud crying, right? Like if I can't do anything else, or I'm in my car seat, for example, and we gotta leave the house and I'm buckling you in and we're going down the road and you're just belting it out as loud as you possibly can to let me know that you're really upset about that, because it's the only tool you feel like you have in this moment. And then crying can also be like meeting the need for experience of just, you know, I want to make loud noises, or I want to just wail about this and see, you know, what happens and how this all is going to play out.
Exactly. Kind of just like seeing how the environment like reacts to, how their body, how they react, what the crying creates as an experience in the environment, which is also big, how toddlers like learn who they are, is like how their environment responds to them. So it's all part of that like testing process.
And I just say one thing to really look for in your kids is watching kids go from anger to sadness to whining or just grumbling about something. Really looking for that pattern of de-escalation, because sometimes we get wrapped in this idea of, oh, the child's still crying, this isn't improving. But if you see the child make a progression from anger to sadness, that's a huge step right there. It shows that they're already working to calm themselves down. So instead of seeing it in a negative way, it's like, wow, this child already has the skills to start calming themselves down. They're not at the level that I want them to be at, because my preference would be no crying. I'll just be honest. But when you see them start to progress, and even like when they go from sad crying to just whining and going, you know, that's as annoying as it is, it's actually a really good sign that the child is starting to develop self-control. They have enough self-control just to eke out a few little whines and grumbles about it rather than completely escalate and go to full-blown anger where they're kicking, screaming, hitting, biting, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's such a great example. It's so true. And I love, how it illustrates that it's not just about the outcome. And when we're solely focused on the outcome, like crying must stop, then we miss all of the wins and the transitions and the progress that's being made through the process. And so it's just a great example of how the focus on the process and staying like present in the moment versus attached to a specific outcome and getting there by a certain time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I really love that. And so, yeah, so in terms of what to watch for, so this would you say this is a way that children use crying to adapt to their environment and adapt to an adult's agenda or like the expectations and boundaries in their lives?
Yeah, so what we often see with or think with crying is they're defying me. And they never listen. They don't do what I want. And what's really happening there is the child is working to adapt to your boundary. They're facing a wall, a boundary that you're not shifting, and they're working to cope emotionally and adapt to that. And like I said before, when you're looking for that downward progression of the child starting to calm, maybe they're still crying, but they're not in complete full-blown anger. The child is starting to adapt to where you're at. And the biggest area of growth for myself has just been the timeline with which these things happen. I expect, you know, or I've had expectations in the past of this all happening within a few minutes time. And sometimes it just takes longer. You know, as adults, we still fall into these emotional upsets and our own, you know, quote unquote tantrums, right? And I don't know if anyone else has been there, but I have. And it's like, gosh, I've been doing this for 30 plus years and I'm still trying to figure out how to regulate my emotions. And here I have a 2 or 3 year old. So I just need to adjust my timeline for how long this might take them to adapt. And certain boundaries might take a child several days or a couple of weeks, and other boundaries may only take a few minutes. And just to recognize that can be a huge perspective shift and a relief that it's like, okay, wow, my child isn't resisting me. They're actually just working to adapt.
Yeah, that's such a huge perspective shift, because a lot of times we can feel like, oh, they're resisting me, or they're never happy. They're never satisfied. Like, that's another, like, feeling that, you know, interpretation that comes up a lot. So it's just such a relief to know that when we relax the expectations for ourselves and our children a little bit, then it's just provides more space for everyone to adapt and move forward and really just respect everyone's journey. It'd be great if we could be robots and our children like could be robots and be like predictable. We can just turn it on, turn it off, you know. That's just not how it works when we're human, though.
Right. Unfortunately.
Right? It's like coming to terms with like our humanity can be so freeing and at the same time just so like frustrating at times.
Oh, for sure. Very frustrating.
Yeah. So what do you feel are some of the best ways to support a toddler that's crying?
Well, I don't want to send the message that we just have to resign to this crying, that this is just how it is and your kid's just going to cry and it may take 30 minutes to an hour and you have to kind of live with it. That can be very discouraging. And I'm an action taker, right? So I like to think of, you know, ways that we can make this better. But the biggest piece is that, okay, if a child's crying is communicating a message and all kids want to feel heard and understood, then one of the best things you can do is that validation piece, that say what you see, where you're describing what your child is thinking, feeling, doing, saying, without questions, reasons, judgment, or any type of fixing. And you don't have to get anything done in this step of say what you see. Many other parenting philosophies in the positive discipline space call it validation. And you don't have to agree with what's going on, but you're just, or you're not condoning your child's behavior, but you're agreeing what's going on in that moment that is neutral and objective. You know, it's like something like, you really wanted that toy and you're sad, you're crying, there's tears going down your face, there's a huge frown on your face, you're kicking your legs now. And you're matching this intensity that your child is exuding to you. And you have to come at it with an authenticity. Like, you know, if you were out with a friend and they were telling you they just lost their job, you would speak to them with an authenticity of like, my gosh, I'm so sorry that happened to you. You know, you lost your job. That was very important to you. And you have to speak like that with your toddler. And once they see that you're authentic and that you get it, they will feel heard and understood, and they don't have to keep trying to prove to you that they are right to feel this way or right in their wanting to cry about it. Because I think what we will often find is that when we try to stop the crying, it can escalate it because the child's like, no, I'm right to cry and I'm going to prove it to you. And I'll have to get louder and escalate up my communication so that you can see that this is okay with me and this is my way of choosing to start to adapt and cope and communicate my message. So really sticking with that validation piece. And if you remember nothing else in the heat of the moment when you're triggered or your child is upset, is just say what you see. And it doesn't have to take long. It can just be a few minutes. And from there, kids can really start to open up to your guidance because they feel seen.
Yeah, I love this. And the authenticity piece, like, thanks for saying that, because for me, like, if all with all the clients that I work with, all the parents in my community, that I think is like the biggest obstacle that comes with validation is the authenticity piece. Like, sometimes it's like either like just super neutral, but then it's like emotionless, or right, so it's just like kind of robotic, or just like through gritted teeth, or sometimes just going through the motions, because we're so focused on getting to the end part, which is like moving on and moving forward. So all of these like little examples I just gave kind of throw off kilter or wreck the like connection or authenticity. And that's really like the key, yet it's also the biggest obstacle, I think, in this.
Yeah, when you think about it, for kids, for a two-year-old, and they have to pick up their toy and put it away so that you can leave the house, this really is life or death to them in that moment. It feels that heavy because that is their work that they're working on, you know, and it's like, I know, this toy is everything to you in this moment, and you just want to keep playing. You know, it looks like they're just something that you need to finish. Finishing things is very important to you. And when the child is seen in something like that in that moment, it really is like, oh, when you hit it and you get to say what you see and it lands, your child's eyes will light up, or they'll pause and they'll just be like, what? You know, like, whoa, you really understand what's going on here. And just conveying that, the gravity of the situation to them, it's like, ah, yeah, finally, someone understands the plight of my life here. Is putting away this toy is horrifying. That would be a horrifying idea.
Yeah, no, it's so true. And sometimes it's really hard to put ourselves in the shoes of our little ones, because for us, we're like, it's just a toy. It's just, you right. know, from our adult logic, it can be really hard to see it from our toddler's point of view. But like, one thing I like to say, it's like, well, say you're like doing your work on your computer, and then like, I don't know, your husband walked in and like said, it's time to leave, and then just came and like shut your computer screen down like mid typing. And that same feeling that, you know, you or I would have in that moment is exactly how a toddler feels like during a transition, or where it's time to stop playing. But it's sometimes we just need to like put it into terms that make sense for us, because the things that we care about deeply are not the same things that two-year-olds care about deeply.
Exactly right.
Right? You can just imagine like if someone, or I don't know, you're like mid text typing and then like your phone's gone. Like it doesn't.
Yeah.
The other thing you said I thought was like really important to highlight is the like the pushing and pulling. Like when we push, then a toddler's going to push back. When we pull, a toddler's going to pull as well. So if we're trying to make them stop crying, they're probably going to get louder, because it's this like whole thing that like it's a just part of toddlerhood, that it's like they want to feel seen, heard, understood. They want to know that they're loved, and this is like crying for connection. This is, you know, part of it. And with crying for power, it's like they want to feel like that they have a say and that they can have some independence and capability. So it's just interesting to note that toddlers are just innately kind of programmed to like, if someone pushes against them, they're going to push back. Or if we try to pull them one direction, they're going to pull the other direction. And it's largely developmental and just based on their needs when they're in that meltdown mode.
Yes. And they will fight to be heard. I mean, they're so persistent and they just don't give up on this connection with their parents. Mm-hmm. Which is why it can help you make a lot of sense of crying and random outbursts. If, for example, I work to stop the crying and that's my primary goal, and I can do some things that will probably work in the moment. But when those unheard upsets start to build, they ultimately will come out some way, somehow. So if they're not going to come out in that moment and the child isn't heard or understood, start to see all sorts of random behaviors pop up that you don't like very much, because all those miscommunications are oozing out everywhere, and that's very hard. And so if you're willing to stick with this validation piece in those moments, it can start to make a huge difference, especially long term. If this foundation starts now in the toddler years, you get to those elementary years and you're just like, wow, like so much emotional growth. And it's hard to see a couple of years in advance the difference that you're going to make, because when you're at the park and it's this huge ordeal or meltdown, and it's like, my gosh, how in the world can you see in 2 years that your child is going to be so different and have self-control, emotional self-control? It's difficult, you know, to like get out of the moment and realize the work that you're doing right now is so, so important and so, so valuable into what the next couple of years will look like.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, when we're lost in the thick of it or we're down in the weeds, like we can't see like the end line or the end result, or it's kind of like being in the middle. You're like in a maze, you know, and then like versus looking at the maze from an aerial view, like, oh, makes so much more sense now. And it can just be so challenging when we're in the thick of it. And, you know, we just want to react, and it's just can be so triggering. And what I always like to really underscore is that like parenting really is a marathon, and raising a child is a marathon. It's not a sprint. And, you know, when we try to just stop or fix the behavior, like stop crying, you know, that's a Band-Aid. And, you know, maybe your child stops in that moment, maybe they don't, but as you said, like, it'll pop up somewhere else if they haven't been seen or heard. And, you know, this is where what we're discussing here is just looking from that deeper place and really addressing the needs that are underneath the behavior is what's going to create the long-term change. And so it's just like, I think the biggest message is like, hang in there. Like, you can do this. And even if you don't see results in like one day or 1 week, you're still supporting your toddler and building the skills, and you will see the rewards and benefits of this down the road.
Yeah. And one final piece that I would say just on this exact question that we were working through was that kids set up challenges for themselves all the time. And so when we see a pattern of behavior of crying, it can often be the child working to help themselves calm down on their own. And if they have the sense that someone else is always trying to stop this emotional path for them, they'll keep coming back to it to practice. I know I can do this. I know I can learn to calm myself down, and I'm escalating into these tears and now I'm calming myself down. But if I never get to practice figuring this out on my own, then I have to keep doing it over and over again and finding ways to figure this out. And that was a huge perspective shift for me. It's like, wow, if I just stop constantly stepping in to stop my child from crying and they're learning to calm themselves down, and I keep this supportive role and I'm offering guidance and I'm helping them find options or choices within that, wow, magical stuff starts to happen. And then, you know, later on, you look for these moments where something that would have so upset your child, and now it's like just a few whines. Holy smokes. I mean, and then you can go to your child and name a strength and say, you know, this was really something that is frustrating to you. And look at you, you handled it. You just had to get a few whines out, and now you're ready to go, and you got a smile on your face, and you did that. And then from there, the child's future actions are based out of those behaviors. They can see that in themselves through observation. That's their own proof. It's not false praise, because you're not just making it up or something that you think or believe. The child can see it in the observation that you're making of their own behavior.
Yeah, that's so powerful. Thanks for adding that piece in. Yeah, I love that. So as we explore this a little bit further, when we look at our role as the adults, as the parents and caregivers, what would you say really is our role, or what we can do when we see our child are having a hard time or just crying a lot repeatedly? Like, what things can we do in addition to validation, to really set up the relationship and the environment to support?
Sure. So it starts with validation, but that's not where it ends. That's just one piece. And one thing that I often talk with parents about is I don't subscribe to this idea that you just have to be stuck in validation and stay in validation this whole time. That's a great starting point, but you probably also have many other things going on in your life, things around the house that need to get done or places that you need to go. And sitting down on the floor for 30 minutes might not be realistic, right? Because life goes on. And so starting with that validation piece is great. But then as parents, our role is to check in with ourselves and figure out what our real boundaries are. And so I will often stop in the moment, close my eyes and say, am I okay with this? Am I not okay with this? First, because you have to get clear on where you're at. It's up to us as parents to set those boundaries and be really clear on it. That piece the child can't do. This is a hard, what I'm about to say next is a hard one to hear, but it is not our child's job to respect our boundaries. It is our job to respect ourselves enough to hold our own boundaries. And very, very important to, you know, if you're stepping out of that belief, it really changes everything in that, okay, this is my boundary. My child's having a really hard time adapting to it. Now this is the guidance piece to help my child work to adapt and problem solve with them together. So once you're clear on what your boundary is, then you can go into, you know, you're doing, you say the say what you see part, you're doing this X, Y, Z, and I'm not okay with this. And a very, very easy way to state your boundary is just to say, I don't like this, or I'm not okay with this. And you can stay out of reasons, because when you start getting into reasons about your boundaries, then you get into this lawyering argument with your kid, with a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old, and they'll come up with a million reasons why your reason isn't very good. So if you're able just to stay in it, that ultimately doesn't matter what the reason is. I mean, I can give you a reason, but I'm not going to change my mind. And to say, you know, I'm not okay with this, must be something you can do, is just the all-purpose sort of can do that you can say. There must be something you can do. There must be something you can figure out and see what the child comes up with. And then if they're still struggling, you can start to work together with possible solutions. And each time your child comes up with an idea, you can say, I'm okay with that, or I'm not okay with that, right? And it's just kind of this back and forth, and you don't need to get into negotiation if you don't want to. I try to avoid that, but helping the child learn to problem solve and find their own solutions within your boundaries is really important. So I don't know, maybe Devin, if I should walk through a quick example of how this might work so that parents could see.
Yeah, we have a little bit of time left. You could absolutely do that.
So let's go back to the classic picking up the toys example. And you might say, you know, we need to leave, you need to pick up the toys, and your child comes back and says, no, I'm not doing that. And then maybe they start crying that they have to leave, or you grab a toy and you put a toy for them, and then it's like, ah, you know, they're going crazy. And it's like, you know, this is when you can dive back into that validation. Like I had said before, you know, you're putting the red block on top of the blue block, and you're building this tower, and it looks like almost like a castle you have going on there. And the child may tell you more information, and that's how you know you're on the right track. And they're like, yeah, big castle, or, you know, or they'll correct you and tell you if you're wrong. And you can say, and it's time for us to leave. And, you know, there must be something you can do. And the child may, you know, tell you something that they have to finish. And you could say, you know, well, I'd be okay with you finishing in 5 minutes, and, you know, something like that. And it's kind of this evolving type of problem solving. And especially with toddlers, though, anytime, you know, they're struggling, you can feel confident to step in and say, you know, it looks like you need a little bit of help, and I'm here to help you, and I'll walk you through that.
Yeah, that's a great example. I love that. And, you know, when we're talking about like these problem solving skills, like, again, these are like the things that we're talking about that, you know, it's not just we practice once and then all of a sudden, like our young ones can like solve these problems, but it's a skill that's developed over time. And this is why it's so important to set our boundaries, but first to be clear on what even our boundaries are, and then support children in working to adapt to the boundaries. And as you know, you said that it might take like a week or 2 weeks or just one day, depending on how high of a gradient this boundary is to where a child's at in the moment. And it's the problem solving skills that I see as like the piece of the puzzle that actually supports a child in being able to eventually meet the expectation and boundary through our support.
Yeah, and you'll see them start to grow in that. It just takes time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you might be really surprised with some of the ideas that your toddler comes up with. They're very creative and they're not trapped in their logical brain like we are, where we just kind of see everything as, you know, logical and stuff. Well, they'll come up with all sorts of creative ideas if you're willing to ride that wave with them.
Yeah, no, they absolutely will. And that's what's so cool is like, okay, for some things it can take like a while, you know, but for other things, like toddlers are so brilliant and creative, they have something. And it might be just super funny and, you know, kind of like nonsensical and just give everyone a great laugh. And then it also might be something that like, oh, hey, yeah, we could try this out. Why not? But it's just amazing what can happen when we are open to hearing what our little ones have to say and really show them that we're on their team versus like on the other side of the table, like that we're sitting beside them versus like in a face-off or a standoff, because
there's a fly. Oh my gosh. Sorry.
That's what makes this whole thing work. So yeah, that's, it's just amazing when we put a little bit of trust in ourselves and a little bit of trust in our little ones, what we can create there.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. Well, for parents and caregivers who are looking to take action and create change, and they're just at the beginning of their journey in shifting their perspective around crying and creating crying as a positive experience, both for their toddler and themselves, what's one thing that they can implement today, or like the place where you recommend, like, this is where you should start?
Well, I think the easiest thing to do is do what feels easy to you, right? Sometimes that easy piece is just the validation piece, starting with that. And then the harder piece is really, this fly is unrelenting, of course. The other piece is to dig into our own stuff, which is the harder work. That's not the easy stuff, but digging into our own thoughts about crying and why am I having such a strong reaction to this? And sort of writing that out if you want to, or whatever exercise you feel comfortable sort of exploring that with. But I know for myself that once I was able to really work through some of that, I was able to have this huge sense of relief. I had this a much easier, clear path to how I was going to best help my child and support them through crying and help them learn to adapt. And I know it's so hard, but if you're willing to really kind of dig into it and stick with it, gosh, it is incredible what is on the other side. Once kids start to develop that emotional self-control, executive functioning, they at a very young age have already figured out how to emotionally self-regulate. And that is a skill that will serve them for life.
Yeah, it really will. Like, we're planting the seeds of a lifelong skill in these foundational years. And like, what I'm hearing is like the place to like really, your invitation of the place to start is to really just for us to examine our own relationship to crying and what we make it mean and, you know, what our reaction is and what has that reaction come up, and just starting to explore our own relationship with crying to kind of clear the space then to be able to support our little ones.
Yeah.
Awesome. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or leave us with around crying in the toddler years?
Everything is perfect as it is. I know that was a hard one for me to sort of wrap my head around, but everything that both you and your child is doing is working. There's always something that's right about it. And so if you can look for what's right about it, what is making this work in this moment, it's a pretty big deal. And I'll use a really, really quick example for when we're yelling, which might be our own adult version of crying, right? Is what's right about it? Well, you probably are just trying to help your child and teach them the life lessons that they need to know in order to survive in this world. And if you didn't love your child, you wouldn't bother, you know, escalating and using all this energy to get up there. You're using the tools as best as you can with the information that you have. And so I always say, well, look what's right about it. How is it working? And then see what you like or don't like about it. You know, a lot of times when we yell, we don't like it. Well, but there's something about it that's working. Well, then if there's something about it that you don't like, that's your cue that you want to change it and do something different and try different things. But you know, that's just the big thing, I think, is look for what's right about the situation, what's working, and then deciding, even with your toddlers, you know, then something's not working. Okay, figure out what that is, and now you have something to work with. That's a clear path versus just sort of shooting, you know, at sticks in the dark, and that can be life-changing.
Yeah, it really can be. And I love this as like a closing thought, because it's really closely related to what we were talking about earlier with, like, if we're so focused on the outcome, sometimes we can't see what's working in the moment, that, you know, like a child might be shifting like their emotion in the moment and that they're actually de-escalating. And so there's just so many opportunities to look at what is working.
Yes.
I love it. Well, our time's coming to a close. I wish we could keep talking forever, but we've got to move on. And I know that there is a gift that you'd like to offer our audience. Would you like to tell us more about that?
Sure. So I have a set of visual routine cards that I'm going to gift to y'all for free. And we'll put the link below and you can go in and access that. And often crying can be a miscommunication, or especially at a young age, toddlers can struggle to articulate verbally what they need or want. And using a visual routine, while not specifically language of listening based, can be a great tool to help toddlers communicate with you and also to communicate with them. So a visual routine helps a toddler follow a routine without you necessarily needing to cue them. The routine is sort of cueing them. Toddlers can feel a sense of power and control when they start to develop their own routine and participate in that process. And I've found that it helps, can really, really help toddlers transition easier during morning, mealtime, and bedtime routines when you're using visuals to help them.
That's awesome. That is such a generous gift. And I think that it's going to be so supportive for our audience. Thank you so much for gifting that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And lastly, where can our audience go to learn more about you and your work?
Sure. The easiest place to find me is at themilitarywifeandmom.com. If you want to contact me directly, I have a contact form right on the front of my website. And I'm also active on Facebook and Instagram. And my handles for that is just themilitarywifeandmom.
Perfect. That's awesome. And thank you so much, Lauren, for being here and sharing all of your knowledge and really firsthand experiences with parents and really just creating a space that is so authentic and so supportive.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be back again this year, and I hope for all of you who are listening, you get to enjoy many of the rich, rich conversations and talks that are part of this wonderful conference.
Thank you so much.